Great. Yeah, Penfilo. Thank you. Could you just I'm going to be a little over here. Love this old wall. I like to walk along here and trail my fingertips on the stone. There's a sort of moss green bled into the gray brown of the stone, so you think it's going to be soft to the touch, maybe, but it's not. It's nicely rough. I know I'm strange, but do it. It's nice. It's not a feeling you feel every day. Feel it. Let's go up the steps and the churchyard. The oldest burial ground in the city. My favorite place downtown. I know, dear pod friends, that most of you think I'm a sap and a hopeless romantic, and to a certain extent, you're right. But sap and romance are only the surface of what I am. The deeper truth is, I am a student and a devotee of love. Penfilo, please pull your mask up over your nose. To me, love is a holy mystery. Like death, love and death are often spoken of in the same breath because they're the two great holy mysteries. There's a shadowy borderland between them. Certainly, when we encounter them, normal life is so distressed that it's never quite the same again. To cope, we have to label it the new normal. Love and death simply overwhelm us. I see the way a few of you are looking at me now. Where'd all that stuff come from? Elise's a freak. Well, I'll tell you my story, and it's a true story told to me by my father about a family he knows, and maybe then you'll see where all that stuff comes from. Penfilo, pull your mask down over your mouth and stay over there. Years ago, my father knew a man named Leonard Seiger. They did business together a few times, and they were on the same boards and belonged to the same clubs. Leonard had a firm that provided all kinds of financial services, I think. My father said it had endless tentacles. Leonard was very smart and aggressive, and over the years, his firm grew and grew until it was worth billions and had branches in São Paulo and Stockholm and Singapore, and you get the idea. Leonard was hugely successful and immensely rich. Finally, in his early 50s, as rich and secure as can be, he took a wife. She was Geraldine, a dark-haired beauty a couple of decades younger than Lenny, as she called him. Within a year, Geraldine gave birth to their son. They named him Gerald after his mother and called him Jerry. His mother was also called Jerry, one R and an I. She loved that she and her son had the same name. In fact, she loved her Jerry to distraction. She sheltered him and spoiled him, petted him and lectured him. She pressed him to her breast, stroked his hair, kissed him all over his face, then pushed him from her and fled the room. I know, right? Jerry was a small, thin, quiet boy who was given, on occasion, to terrible tantrums. His only real friend was the daughter of his father's chauffeur, Ron. Her name was Sally. She was a strong, warm-hearted, outgoing girl. She lived with her father in an apartment above the garage. Ron was a widower, a calm and somewhat melancholy man. He loved his daughter with his whole heart, but he was a far less overbearing parent. He taught his daughter that in this life, there's no sense worrying about what you deserve. From the first, Jerry and Sally spent all the time they could in each other's company. Geraldine forbade Sally the main house, so Jerry and Sally played in the lawns and in the gardens and the garage, and Jerry sneaked into Sally's room. With the years, their friendship became a powerful love, and as their bodies and feelings and interests changed, that love ignited a fiery passion. Ron was reticent and a little bit anxious about their friendship. Geraldine was dead set against it and strictly rejected it. So Jerry and Sally became secret lovers. They gave themselves to each other, and the gift was passionately renewed each time they were together. They swore that their hearts had become one heart and would burn as one forever. That sounds crazy, right? I mean, gosh, I've never felt anything like that. Ooh, I kind of wish I would. Anyway, Jerry and Sally felt it, and they said that the image of their love was a double heart in flames. Eternal flames. Ooh, okay. I like standing on that platform and walking around the obelisk and those strange old flat slab gravestones, cracked and sharded. Death so long ago, life even longer ago, those long buried there. What about their passions and their hearts? So, one afternoon in early spring, Leonard collapsed in his high corner office with the spectacular views of the city and sky. His heart had failed. He left all of his business and assets to his wife and son, to Jerry and Jerry. Geraldine had loved her husband, and she grieved him fairly deeply, but she hadn't loved him like she loved Jerry. She immediately dedicated herself to making sure that she never lost him. She sent him to business school. Jerry didn't want to leave Sally, but he'd always found it impossible to directly resist his mother's persuasions, not to mention her orders. He reasoned that he'd see Sally on weekends, at holidays, and for whole summers, and then when he finished school, he'd return home, they'd marry, and never be parted again. Sally didn't want him to go. She didn't understand why he had to go, but she decided she wouldn't make it any harder for him than she knew it already was. Jerry snuck into her room the night before he left for school. They made love all night and swore again on the image of the double heart in flames. Geraldine had other ideas and the plans to implement them. She would not have her beloved son sullied and distracted by a low passion for the chauffeur's daughter. She sold herself on the belief that she was doing what was best for him, ensuring that he take his proper place untarnished beside her. She made use of all the tentacles that Leonard's firm had grown over the decades. Jerry had some weekends at home at first, but the frequency of those soon dwindled to nothing as he found his life suddenly filled with obligations in the services of his father's legacy and his mother's devotion. Holidays were spent with her in Gstaad or Rio or Honolulu. Summers were filled with high-level internships at the branches of the firm in Sao Paulo and Stockholm and Singapore, etc. When Jerry graduated, he was sent immediately to take charge of the faltering branch in Hong Kong, then to troubleshoot in Berlin, then to whip things into shape in Cape Town. Jerry felt horribly torn. He longed for Sally with all his heart, but he couldn't resist his mother's will, her appeals to his loyalty, her professions of her loneliness. Calls and texts, emails and letters, yes, even letters, Panfilo, to Sally became problematic and infrequent. Over the years, Jerry's phones, tablets, and laptops had a remarkable number of mysterious malfunctions. "It must be your metabolism, my darling," Geraldine said, teasingly. Sally missed Jerry painfully for a long time. She couldn't understand how he'd abandoned her. She spent many nights crying in her bed. She spent many days just lying in her bed, staring at the wall. Once in a while, she'd jump up and shriek and throw things and break things. But over time, she let it go. She roused herself. She enrolled in nursing school. Geraldine paid the tuition. There was a young man named Dave who drove a van and delivered auto parts to Ron. He was a good-natured man who was smitten with Sally. They started dating. She liked his company and felt safe with him. The first time they made love, Sally found it pleasant and relaxing. Sally became a nurse. She and Dave married, bought a nice house. Life was good. They were happy. Only very rarely, as she was falling asleep or in a moment of daydreaming, did Sally see a small, bright red spot at the back of her mind that was the image of a double heart in flames. For Jerry, the image of the double heart in flames occupied a large part of his mind. He kept it behind a thick veil. He knew that the fates, in collusion with his mother, had contrived to keep he and Sally apart. His passion veiled, he waited for his chance to return to her. One evening, as he worked late at his desk in the struggling Mumbai branch, the chance came. He received a call. Geraldine had had a stroke and was in the hospital. He took the first flight home. After visiting his mother and seeing that she was out of danger, Jerry went to their house and immediately to the garage where he found Ron. Ron mumbled reluctantly Sally's address. Jerry drove directly there. Before too long, he saw her coming along the sidewalk. She wore scrubs and Crocs and a cardigan sweater, and he felt that he desired her more than ever and that she had grown fully into her beauty. He jumped out of the car and ran to meet her. She smiled and nodded at him as she passed and went up the steps to the door. Jerry whirled. "Sally!" he cried. "It's me! It's Jerry! It's me!" Sally stopped and looked back at him. "Jerry?" she said. He came closer to her and stood at the foot of the steps. "I found my way back to you at last," he said. "You're more beautiful than ever. I have never stopped wanting you, and now I want you more than ever." I haven't heard from you in a long time, Jerry," she said. "I'm married now. Can I at least come in for a minute? Talk?" "I don't think so," she said. I'm sorry, Jerry." She went inside and closed the door. Jerry returned to his car and drove home in a daze. The next morning, he was parked outside of Sally's house again. He watched from his car as Sally and Dave emerged and went their separate ways to work. He broke into the house through the back door. He found a spare room, sparsely furnished and stacked with boxes, and settled in to wait. He hadn't slept much the night before, so he dozed off and on and dreamed strange wish-fulfillment dreams. He awoke when he heard Dave and Sally return, then all the sounds of their evening at home together, then silence. He waited a little while longer, then left the spare room and crept into the bedroom. Dave was breathing heavily, deep in sleep. Sally was quiet, curled away from her husband. Jerry tiptoed to the bed and knelt down beside Sally. He could smell her clean smell and feel her warmth. He shook her gently and whispered her name. When she opened her eyes, she knew him at once. "Jerry, please," she whispered. "You can't. You have to leave. My husband is right here." "We promised our hearts would burn as one forever," he murmured. "But they didn't," she said. "Mine did," he said. "I didn't know that," she said. "You were gone, so mine didn't. Mine does," he said. "Mine doesn't," she said. "I have a life I like. It's pleasant and I'm useful." "I want you, Sally," he said. "I'm sorry, Jerry," she said. There was a long silence between them. Then she said, "Please go now, Jerry. You have to go. I don't want to wake my husband." "All right," he said. "But do me one favor. I'm cold. Let me lie down next to you for a few minutes and feel your warmth for the last time. I'll lie right on the edge with my back to you. I promise I won't touch you, just for a few minutes, then I'll be gone." Sally was hesitant, but Dave was a deep sleeper, and if Jerry was gone in a few minutes, she couldn't see the harm. And it was Jerry. So she made room for him at the edge of the bed. Jerry laid down with his back to her. He could feel her behind him. He was flooded with desire and despair. He held his breath and clenched his fists and went inside himself to where the thick veil hid the double heart in flames. He seized the veil, then flung it over the heart and flung himself on top of it and smothered the flames. After a few minutes, Sally sensed that Jerry had gone completely still. She put her hand on his shoulder and shook him a little. He didn't move. She sat up and shook him hard. She reached over and placed two fingers on his neck. She felt no pulse. True to his word, he had gone. Sally sat still for some time and stared into the dimness. Then she felt tears running down her cheeks, which caused her to snap to and wake her husband. When she was sure he was fully awake, she told him the entire story of herself and Jerry, from their childhoods to the moment Jerry had gotten into their bed. Then she moved aside and showed her husband Jerry lying there. Dave got out of bed and walked around to have a look. Then he got his phone and called 911. A few days later, Ron called to tell Sally the visitation hours for Jerry at the funeral home. "I don't know if I should go," she said to Dave. "It might upset his mother. It's all so strange. I'm not sure how I feel."
"I think you should go, Sal," said Dave. "He was a huge part of your life. You should say goodbye to him."
And he kissed the top of her head. The next day, Sally and Ron walked slowly into the room at the funeral home. An elaborate casket rested at one end of the long room. Geraldine sat in a throne-like chair beside the head of the casket. She was as beautiful as ever, Sally thought, though she could see that Jerry's mother leaned heavily, even seated on a cane gripped in her left hand. Ron went to speak with her, while Sally went straight to the casket. She looked down at the thin, pale face that she knew so well. "Jerry," she murmured. The small, bright, red spot at the back of her mind grew and came quickly forward, blooming into the image of the double heart in flames. The heart rushed forward and grew until it filled her whole mind with searing red light. The heat from the flames was nearly unbearable, scorching her within, and she suddenly knew. She wasn't meant to be a nurse or married to Dave. She wasn't meant to have a pleasant and useful life. She was meant for ceaseless passion. She was meant for Jerry. The flames filled her mind. There was a roaring in her ears. She moaned. Blood ran from her nose, and she fell to the floor at the foot of the casket. Dead. Days later, Geraldine, Ron, and Dave met and shared their sorrows. They agreed that Sally and Jerry should be put in the same casket and buried together. And so it was. On their tombstone is cut the sign of the double heart in flames. Well, there. Love and death. It's one holy mystery. It really is always so lovely here. But, shall we go? Yeah, we should go. Okay, great. Let's go home.